Okay, today's a Shchedesh Kislev, and they put on the flyer that we're going to have a Fabrengen. The cover of the Shchedesh Kislev. Fabrengen is an interesting concept in itself. The concept of a Fabrengen is a very interesting concept. Because if you look at a Fabrengen with a certain measure of superficiality, you could make the claim that it's a waste of time. What happens by a Fabrengen? What happens by a Fabrengen? Nothing happens by a Fabrengen. You don't necessarily learn anything new. You don't acquire new information. The Rebbe's Fabrengen is different, because the Rebbe couldn't help but give us enormous quantities of Teda with a lot of Chiddush, because this is the Rebbe. His whole Etzem is Teda. Chassidim get together and have a Fabreng. What happens? So there's Divrei Teda said. Of course, someone says Avart. They say ideas from Chassidus. They speak Yanam of Avodas Hashem. But the amount of time that a Fabrengen takes. And the thing about a Fabrengen is you can't have just one. You have to have many Fabrengens. A Fabrengen begats a Fabrengen. The Rebbe used to say in the early years, the very first years the Rebbe used to say, he said it more than once, that you don't stop Fabrengen, you make a break. It's just a hefsek. And he connected it to something that the Rebbetzin must have told him, that the Rebbe, the Friedrich Rebbe, had a younger daughter whose name was Rabbanus Tzitkunas Shena. She remained in Treblinka, Hashem Yinkim Dom. On the Rebbetzin's tombstone, on the Rebbetzin's matzeva, her name is written on the bottom, because she doesn't have a grave, she doesn't have a tzion. And apparently the Rebbetzin was very close to her younger sister. So the Rebbe said many times, and I think he didn't just tell the story to be cute, I think he told the story because he wanted to mention her name. That's my humble opinion. At the Gewalter der Mannen. And many times the Rebbe said the same thing, that when she was a little girl, she was the youngest. And she had the temperament of the youngest. So she didn't get what she wanted, she cried. And apparently she knew how to cry pretty good. So they had to get her to stop crying, so they would bribe her. So she would say, I'm not stopping to cry, I'm taking a break. In other words, don't think you've turned me off. You've given me a reason. So the Rebbe used to say, when you make a Chassidish Fabrengen ends, that's where the Fabrengen ended. You took a break, Fabrengen continues. In the early years, the Rebbe Fabrengen more like a mashpia. So you have such warm expressions. Mamish warm, Chassidish, almost mashpia-like expressions from the Rebbe himself. Where he would say this point that I just said. In other places, the Rebbe says the Lashon, Nu, a good night, bis the next kumedik chassidische Fabrengen. The Rebbe used to finish a good night until the next chassidische Fabrengen. To underscore the idea that it's contiguous, it doesn't end. A chassidische Fabrengen is not about what you take home, it's what it affects in the person. You know, I've told this to you more than once. This is just an episode by way of enlightenment, by way of clarification, if you will. This is a story that I heard from one of my mashpiyim. That on Lubavitch, there was a bacher. I don't know his last name, his first name. I know his last name was Simpson. Maybe it was Evgeshen Simpson, but I could be wrong. He learned the Temchat Mimim in Lubavitch, and he got sick. I don't know what his illness was, but it was respiratory in nature, do with breathing. And the doctors told him that he needs fresh air. There was no problem with fresh air in Lubavitch because there was forest all around, but he had to get out of the Beis Medrash. So he took off a half an hour a day and he took a walk. Which half an hour did he take off? He took off the last half an hour of the Seder Nigle. In Lubavitch, the Seder was that they learned 12 hours. They learned 12 hours. 4 hours of Chassidus, 2 hours in the morning from 7:30 till 9:30. 2 hours at night. From 8:30 till 10:30. And Nigla was 8 hours. There was no lunch. From 11:30 in the morning till 7:30 at night was Nigla. 8 hours. That 2 hours for Shachris and breakfast, but an hour and a half was the Minyan. The Minyan was an hour and a half. And then the hour break for supper, between 7:30 and 8:30, a dinner break. But they learned 8 hours straight. And I heard from people who heard from people in Lubavitch that during those 8 hours, nobody even thought about doing anything but learn. The atmosphere was so Torah-centric. You didn't even feel like it was pressure. You just sat and learned. In the wintertime, they stopped for mincha. It's hard to imagine, but this is what was. The last half an hour of Nigla was not Nigla, it was Tanya. 7 till 7:30, the Mashpia came. His name was Greinim. And I suppose before him, it was others, with Hendel and Ashbaz. And they would learn Tanya. But the way they learned Tanya every day was really very, how shall I say it? Simple. He would read and translate and say what's written and keep moving. So in the course of a half an hour, you could learn a pedik and a half, two parakim. When I was in yeshiva, Rebbe Lachaim, Olav HaShalom, Zecheinu Levrach, Rebbe Lachaim Reitblatt, used to learn Tanya Thursday nights. I was in yeshiva in Alteda 3 years. We went through Tanya 3 times, Mistameh. And his Yiddish was very hard. He had a very, very difficult speech. But he would move quickly. He could learn on a Thursday night, a pedik and a half, two parakim, no problem. And it was more looking at him than hearing what he was saying. But I tried very hard to listen. To me, it was a special thing. But they had in Lubavitch every day a half an hour Tanya. So if a boy was in yeshiva 6 months, he heard it already. Because it went over and over and over again. So this boy, Simpson, again, I'm not sure what his first name was. Let's say his name was Geshev. There was a Geshev Simpson in Lubavitch. I don't know if it's the same person. Decided that this half an hour is his time that he's going to do what the doctor said. The Mashgiach was Reb Shilim. Reb Shilim Kuratin. I've talked about him recently. Chof Cheshon, I talked about him a little bit. Reb Shilim was a very Hasidic Yid, a Freilecher, a Oyved Elokim. And he was a Mashgiach. He was in charge of Hasidus. It was his job. And Reb Shilim noticed that this boy is missing by Tanya. 1 day, 2 days, 3 days. So he watched him. And he saw that it was a pattern. Every day he disappears. So he goes over to him and says to him, I noticed that you're always missing by Tanya. What's the deal? So he tells him the truth. He says, I have a medical need. I have to take a walk every day and get fresh air. And I figure the time of the day that I pay the least by leaving is this half an hour, because I've been in yeshiva so many years, I've heard this so many times. All it does is repeat the same thing anyway. I figure I'll take off this half hour. So Reb Shilim says to him, you can take off any half an hour that you wish, except this one. He said, but it doesn't make any sense. You're repeating the same thing again and again and again. And Reb Shilim says, this half an hour, you have to be in Beis Medrash. You have to listen to the Tanya. It's not a matter of learning. You have to be there. So he tries to reason with Reb Shilim, and Reb Shilim is a stubborn man. So he goes to his big brother. His brother was Rabbi Eliyahu Simpson, Rabbi Simpson, who lived here in New York. Rabbi Eliyahu Simpson in Lubavitch then was a pe'ed, was from the prizes. He was a oivid, and he was a choizer, he was involved in the deepest levels of Hasidus. A very Hasidish bacher. And he had status, you know, he was important. He was his big brother. So he comes to his big brother, and he says to his big brother that they want me not to, the Pshilim said I should skip. I should come to Tanya and take up any other half an hour in the day. So he went to the Pshilim, he argued with the Pshilim also. And Reb Shilim says, listen to me. Tanya is not about learning new information. It's about being there. He can take off any half an hour. And Reb Shilim says, it doesn't make any sense. So Reb Shilim says to him, listen, du bist doch von der Chayzirim. You're a Chayzir. That means that he will review the Maimonim. So Shabbos morning, he had this chus of going into the Rebbe with a small group of Bachrim who would chazer the Maimonim to the Rebbe Nishmasayim. Like I told you 10 days ago, Chav Cheshm, we talked about this at length. It was last week, Thursday and Friday. So when you're in by the Rebbe, for Chazaret, ask the Rebbe his opinion. And whatever the Rebbe says, we'll do. So the following Shabbos, they go into Chazaret. Of course, Reb Shilim was the Chazaret. Reb Shilim, I told you this, he Chazaret the Maimon. And after the Chazaret, as Rebbe Yaichel Simpson was walking out, he says to the Rebbe that we have a difference of opinion. My brother needs, for medical reasons, to take a walk. And I advised him to go during the Tanya, because he's heard the Tanya so many times. And the Reb Shilim is saying he can go any half an hour of the day except for this one. So the Rebbe says to him, Rebbe immediately agreed with the Mashgiach, with Reb Shilim. And he says, Tanya hat man nicht gemacht auf Nemen in Pekel. I did not make a half an hour a day to study Tanya for the Bochum to have information. By Tanya darf man sein. When they do Tanya, you have to be there. And he agreed with the Mashgiach, he can take off a good half an hour of learning and take his walk, but by Tanya he has to be finished. A Fabrengen is like that. The purpose of a Chassidische Fabrengen is not the information that you get, it's the inspiration. And I heard once a mashal from a Chassidische Yid, who gave this mashal not because he read it in a book, but because this was his experience. I've told this to you before. There is a process by which you make kli cheres, earthenware. Earthenware is, it's pottery, a type of vessel. Earthenware, pottery. And it's a whole art and a whole science, and there's so many different types and so many different levels and so forth. The way earthenware is made is you use some kind of a clay. It's a special clay. You can't just take the mud in front of your house. And it's mixed and it's dried. It hardens. But when you harden it, it's very brittle. You put hot water into one of those pots, it'll crumble immediately. And you put it into a furnace, into an oven. The oven is extraordinarily hot, very, very hot. I don't know how, 1200 degrees. Much hotter than the oven you need to cook your chicken Friday afternoon, or you'd want for your chicken. And you bake it. When you bake the cheres, the earthenware, in the oven, it becomes hard. And you can use it for hot and for cold and so forth and so on. Halacha says something even more. When you have an earthenware vessels are very interesting in halacha. If they're treif, you can't make them kosher. If they're tummy, you can't make them tohel. That's all. Earthenware vessel becomes treif. If it mixed milk and meat, it's treif. There's nothing you can do about it. They have to break it. If it becomes tummy, it can, you can't tohel in the mikveh, you can't sprinkle pot adum, it doesn't help. It's finished. When they used to use in the Beis HaMikdash dishes for certain karbonis, they would cook meat in pots. If they cooked the meat in an earthenware pot, you had to break it. Because it was belay at the time of the kachim, of the karbon. And after 2 days, becomes one day becomes from noisir. A karbon after a day or two becomes also to eat. And noisir is the isir, which is a serious aveira. So if they used an earthenware pot to cook chatos, as soon as they finished cooking it, they had to shatter it. You can't do nothing with it. Finished. But there's one eitzer. Put it back in the furnace. You put it back in the furnace. Machzir lekivshin. You put it back in the furnace. The tum is gone. The typhus is gone. And the kedusha is gone. Why? Because you put it in the furnace. It's a new pot. The old pot is gone. The naya metzias. So this young man was saying, what's a fabrengen? The fabrengen is the effect that the oven, the potter's oven, has on pottery. It doesn't change it, but it hardens it. It makes that whatever shape you've given the earthenware becomes the reality of the kli. It's not something in addition to the clay. This is it. There is, by the way, something called kli avonim and kli adom and kli glolim, which means basically pottery, but you didn't put it in an oven. If you didn't put it in an oven, it's not makabel tumah bechlal. It's not a din of a kli. There's no tumah. They used to use kli avonim for the paraduma because there's no tumah, because it didn't become a metzias. It becomes a metzias because the machnitz lekivshin. You put it into the furnace, it cooks. So this bacha, this young man explained, achsidish of abrengen is not about the acquisition of information. I mean, everybody knows what chasidis is. Everybody knows what chasidim are. But there needs to be a devek, a glue between chassidus and chassid. In other words, for person plus chassidus equals chassid? Question mark. Depends, right? So you can learn chassidus, you can come to classes, you can study on your own, you can daven, you can study Eibishter. There needs to be an event, an exercise by which the natural separation between people and ideas is severed or fused. Right? People learn, I always give this example because I think this example is so compelling and it's unsettling also. I've had this experience many times myself till it hit me. It's a very stupid question. What's the trademark? What's the proof that you're standing in front of a hospital? Let me know my answer. There's probably a million answers. What's my answer? A bunch of people standing in the front smoking cigarettes. So Mason Love given? You come to a hospital. I mean, you're based on... The baby should help you go to hospitals for your wife to deliver babies. For you to deliver babies, that's what hospitals are for. The Rebbe says, Mashiach said, come, we're going to need hospitals. Just well visits. So you come to the hospital and all the medical practitioners with their uniforms are standing and smoking cigarettes. There could be no greater act of hypocrisy. It's so blatant. It's so gross. What does it demonstrate? It demonstrates that not necessarily do you do what you know. You have to teach medical professionals that cigarette smoking is not good. They know already. Don't have to tell them. They face and say you're good. And it's a lot more than that they cannot stop. Tzivilzach. Because people are not what they know. People are what they are. And ayir pera adam yuvala. The inherent condition of man is feral. Is wild. Is untamed. Is unfocused. Is undisciplined. And it certainly is not pious. So you have to bake into the person the ideas of Torah, the ideas of Yiddishkeit, the ideas of Chassidus, and that's why I have a Fabrengen. A Fabrengen doesn't give more information. It takes the information that we have and it warms it up. And that's why Chassidus Fabrengen Nishna made so personal. You eat food, you say L'chaim, and so on. I mean, when you have a Fabrengen where a man is talking to women, those things are pushed not allowed. Mitzad tzinis. But when people sit, a Chassidus Fabrengen, it's not usually so formal. But a Chassidus Fabrengen is about energy, it's about warmth, and really that's what it is. It's about bridging a gap between two things that really should be unbridgeable. Yiddishkeit and a person. Yiddishkeit is the Eibishter's gift to the world. It's the truth. What are people? People are people. No need for explanation. Everybody knows what people are. Every one of us knows one person very, very personally, and that's more than sufficient. We all know exactly what people are. Somehow there has to be a fusion between people and Yiddishkeit, and it's more than just the acquisition of knowledge. You know, in the olden days they used to call it Avedis HaTfilah, davening. And davening is really a more focused, is a more concentrated technique. But the inspiration for the davening comes from the Chassidus Fabrengen. You have a Chassidus Fabrengen. It was advertised on the circular that they gave out that we're going to Fabrengen for 2 hours. I don't know what I'm going to say for 2 hours. But the important thing is that every person should go away, at least one person should go away, perhaps me, a little bit more inspired. And of course, the definition of inspiration is that it affects our lives practically. You know, ask a person, are you inspired? I don't know. I, to be quite honest, when you talk about inspiration, there's always two truths. I could be less inspired, and I certainly could be more inspired. You cannot measure inspiration, just like you cannot measure emotions. You can't measure sincerity. You certainly can't measure somebody else's sincerity. It's quite difficult to measure your own sincerity. The measure of everything is in our actions. If good actions came from a Fabrengen, that becomes proof that the Fabrengen was inspiring. If no good action came from the Fabrengen, it becomes a proof in retrospect that the Fabrengen did not have a full effect. And you know, there's a big debate amongst Mashpiyim and amongst Chassidus Bachrim. Is there a point in having a Fabrengen if nothing comes from it? A fellow that I know, I have to be vague because I don't want to give away identities, is involved with all kinds of people. And he's doing mamish wonderful work. I don't want to say his name, but unbelievable work. And he has connections with a lot of people who learned in our Moistis Lubavitchers, who are, let's just say, they're not exactly Chassidus Bachrim. They're not, and it's a little worse than that, but you get the point. So he came somewhere, and he met a group of pushed hippies. They looked like hippies, and they acted like hippies, and they spoke like hippies. But they learned the Tem Chatmim. And he meets them. I don't know whose idea it was, but someone proposed a mitna mitvach. It was the middle of a day's work. Let's have a Fabrengen. So they sat down and had a Fabrengen. He says to me, you can't imagine, if I would close my eyes, I would think I'm sitting in yeshiva with a group of Chassidus Bachrim. Open my eyes, they're wearing pink hair, and I don't know what the Vista, with earrings. So he tells me, he was so inspired by this event. So as the Fabrengen progressed, he started to make demands. He's talking to these Bachrim, these young men, and he sees how moved they are. They love the niggun more than he could ever love the niggun. So he says, so one of them tells him, he says, this is the problem with all your mashpim. You have to ruin every Fabrengen with your practical stuff. We were having such a good time. Why did you have to mention Shabbos? We were doing so well. The Fabrengen was doing perfectly, and you had to ruin it with this religion, you know? So now, he has a very big question, you know? And I'm not sure what the answer is. Because Chassidus Fabrengen is more than a Malach Mechol. He has a very interesting shlichus, and he has a very interesting test and challenge. And it's not simple. Because when you make a Fabrengen into a selfish experience, it stops being a Chassidus Fabrengen. A Chassidus Fabrengen is about Yiddishkeit. And Yiddishkeit is, you know, limud ha-mevi lidei maise, has to translate into our practical lives. But like I said to you, many of Mashpiyah say, many people say that there's a point in having a Fabrengen and being moved and inspired, even if it remains just an inspiration. The very, very least, the Fabrengen serves our good Bruderschaft. People get together and they sit, and there's a kirva levavos, there's a warmth. One of my students had a Fabrengen yesterday afternoon in the house. And some of the boys came in and they talked about, some of the kids went Friday night to the Shluchim. So two Bachrim walk in, both visited Alateira last night when all the Shlichim ate together, and they gave a report of what they experienced. It was two people who were in the same place at the same time and had diametrically opposite experiences. One kid walks in and says, you know, it was unbelievable, a room full of Shlichim. Every table was a separate Fabrengen, and he says. In fact, some tables there were three or four Fabrengens going on. The other kid walks in and says, I went to Alateira, there was nothing happening. A bunch of Shlichim whispering to each other. There was no energy, nothing going on. So the first person, what are you talking about? I walked around, and wherever they were sitting and talking, I poked my ear and listened to their conversations. These are yeshiva friends who haven't seen each other in how long, and they're sitting and they're just being themselves, they're relaxing. So to one bucket, it's nothing. The other bucket, it's mamish, Disneyland of Fabrengens, Ana Shef Fabrengens. Who's right? Of course, everybody is right. The point is, really, ultimately, Fabrengen has to have a matara, a peil mamish, a matara, a translation into our practical life. A Fabrengen is a serious event. A serious event means, let's use another American dirty word, it's responsible. A Fabrengen is an achrayis. In other words, when you come to a Fabrengen, either to participate in a Fabrengen, and especially if you're coming to lead a Fabrengen, the sentiment, the mood has to be, I'm coming for something real. I'm not coming for a party. I'm not coming to relax. There is a warm human element of Chassidus Fabreng, but there is also the need to understand that this is it's an event that's it serves the Eibishter's purposes. You know, if you could articulate the Rebbe's philosophy of life in one sentence, it would be simply the following. Life begins with Yiddishkeit, it continues with Yiddishkeit, and it ends with Yiddishkeit, and there's nothing else. Everything is Yiddishkeit. If the things which don't look overtly like Yiddishkeit, it's because they're Yiddishkeit undercover. But everything is Yiddishkeit. Achsidus Fabrengen is Yiddishkeit. Just like davening is Yiddishkeit and learning is Yiddishkeit, it goes without saying that the purpose of Achsidus Fabrengen is to be warmed and to be cooked and to be baked and to be hardened into the spirit of Yiddishkeit, into the spirit of Chassidus. So today is the Shchedesh Kislev, so we have to talk about the Shchedesh Kislev. Everybody knows, today's 30th anniversary of Reish Chedesh Kislev, and you know the story. I mean, the story has been published in Yeshiva. They gave it out again. You know, I hope I have my copy here. Every year they give out copies of the story of Reish Chedesh Kislev. Basically, the story is that the Rebbe was not feeling well at all. The Rebbe had a severe heart attack, had several heart attacks, and his life was pushed in peril. The doctors insisted that the Rebbe should go to the hospital, and the Rebbe refused. Apparently, doctors came, examined the Rebbe, and told the Rebbe that he needs to go to the hospital. The Rebbe's are not going to the hospitals, so the doctors said, we're leaving. We can't deal with such a patient. We can't take responsibility on a patient that's uncooperative. That's why they had to bring Ira Weiss from Chicago. She says they can't find a cardiologist in the whole city of New York to care about the Rebbe, because Ira Weiss from Chicago was a Chassidish here. The Rebbe says, not going to the hospital. He's not going to the hospital. Sachakel. So they had this week, in Beis Mashiach, I think, several of these doctors. One of the doctors who came right away described that he saw the Rebbe's symptoms of a heart attack, and he tells the Rebbe that he has to go to the hospital. So the Rebbe says, I have to first go make Kiddush. He's going to make Kiddush. He's having a heart attack, he's going to make Kiddush. And the Rebbe says to him, he tells the Rebbe that when it comes to Yiddishkeit and Rebbe's business, there's room here and there's room here. You can't reinkommen. Darf nicht stehen. And it'll also be easier for you here because we're going to be competing with noise in a moment. The seats over here and the seats over here. So he tells the Rebbe, when it comes to matters of Yiddishkeit, the Rebbe is the expert. But when it comes to inyanim of medicine, I'm the doctor and the Rebbe is the patient. Right now the Rebbe needs a doctor. And as such, I'm saying to the Rebbe that he needs, please sit over here. That he needs to go to the hospital. So the Rebbe tells him, you're taka right. You're the doctor and I'm the patient. And in truth, a patient in my position needs to go to the hospital, but in this case, this doctor and this patient, you're giving me a wrong diagnosis. He tells the Rebbe, it's a different situation. And the Rebbe uses these words. He says, this room, you have no idea. The Rebbe tells him, you have no idea what's transpired in this room, what's going on in this room. And the Rebbe says to him, to me, this room is the Kedesh HaKadoshim. The Rebbe says himself, Chassidim have always called the Rebbe's room. The Rebbe says, this room to me is a Kedesh HaKadoshim. In other words, so much Yiddishkeit and so many Yiddish tzaddis and so much has happened in this room. There's no better place for me to be than right here. other doctors have told this story with Ashini Girsa, but this doctor, the Rebbe told him that to him, this room is Kedesh HaKadoshim, and he cannot leave it. The version that we always heard, I don't think necessarily is a conflict, that one of the doctors proposed to the Rebbe to go to the hospital. And the Rebbe said to him, look, you see these walls? He points at his room. You see these books? You see these walls? He says, yeah. He says, these books and these walls are saturated with thousands of hours of listening to Yiddish tzaddis, to Yiddish pain and anguish and suffering. And he says, these walls will heal me. That's what the Rebbe said. These walls will heal me. The Rebbe refused to go to the hospital. And he didn't go to the hospital. And they brought the most state-of-the-art medical equipment to 770. Mamish, the best and the most modern. And the doctor said later, had they known that they could bring this kind of equipment to 770, they never would have proposed in the first place to move the Rebbe, because moving a patient in that condition is never a good idea. Bottom line is, the Rebbe didn't go to the hospital. He stayed in his room. And it was a crisis. It was a serious crisis. The Rebbe was very, very ill. I heard a couple of years back, and I've shared this with you also, that the Rebbe said to Rabbi Groner in the winter time, a few months after the event, that when I was resting, Shmini Atzeres by day apparently, you kept coming into the room. Every half an hour, Rabbi Groner opened the door, took a look. So the Rebbe says to him, why were you coming into the room? Why were you continuously coming into the room? And Rabbi Groner wasn't going to tell the Rebbe why. He said, I know why. Because the doctors told you to keep entering the room. Because the doctors thought what they thought. He says, never says, no, you see? The doctors didn't think that there was a lot of hope. This is what I heard recently, a few years ago. It's something that could be confirmed, but the Rebbe says to him, they kept on telling you to come in, huh? No, you see? Well, who was right? Anyway, the Rebbe stayed in 770. And I'll tell you the end of the story first, and then I'll go back and I'll tell you some details. The end of the story was that the Rebbe was in his room the whole time. And they cordoned off the front of 770, and the back of the shul was blocked off also, so the Rebbe could have some peace and quiet. There should be quiet and peaceful for the Rebbe. And the Rebbe, they brought a bed into the Rebbe's room, and the Rebbe lived there. At first they made a minyan right outside the Rebbe's door, and the Rebbe was well enough, the Rebbe used to go into the small base medrash. That whole winter, the Rebbe dived in the small base medrash upstairs. He didn't come downstairs. The Fabrengen Shabbos happened Matzah Shabbos, Saturday night. There would be, in the beginning of that winter, the Rebbe used to push and speak Sichas from his room. And at a certain point, the Rebbe started coming downstairs Matzah Shabbos, picking up and bringing it on a mic, because it was difficult for the Rebbe to speak. A couple of years later, the Rebbe started Fabring again Yom Tov and Shabbos, and things went back to normal and more than normal. But in any case, what happened was that the Rebbe was in his room for this 5-week period approximately, and Rosh Chodesh Kislev, the Rebbe went home. That's the whole story. The Rebbe left 770 and went home. And of course, what the rumor spread, the Bachim heard that the Rebbe is going home. And this to them was a sign that the Rebbe is feeling better. The Rebbe refused to leave 770. He said, this is the place where I have to be. This is going to heal me. So they viewed the Rebbe is going home as a sign that the Rebbe felt that he was sufficiently healthy. So before the Rebbe even came out of his room, the party started. That's what happened. But a time, and when the Rebbe came out of his room to go home, he was just going home, sachakel. He hadn't been home in 5 weeks. He was going home. It was a perfectly normal thing. The Rebbe went home every night, sometimes twice a day. And the energy in 770 was unbelievable. They took out the Sefer Torah, they finished the hakafas that they hadn't finished, many atzeres, and they danced and they said l'chaim and so on. And they gave the Rebbe a lot of nachas. But more than they gave the Rebbe nachas, they gave the Rebbe some nachas. The Rebbe had been in 770 during that period of time a lot. She looked after the Rebbe, and she made sure that the Rebbe got what he needed and what he wanted. And when the Rebbe went home, the Rebbe didn't go home. She stayed upstairs, and she observed the proceedings from the window. She got a lot of nachas from it. I don't know how much of what people say you can infer, but fact of the matter was, she stayed several hours after the Rebbe left to witness the Chassidim Fabreng and the Shchedesh Kislev. This is the short version of the story. Of course, there's many, many more details to the story. But I want to tell you something else. This is a true story. I've told it to you many times. Rabbi Yankov Hecht, Zecheinu Lebracha, tells the story himself. He told the story many times. That sometime during the winter of Lamed Ches, 1977-78, the Rebbe was feeling much better. He asked the Rebbe if there was an explanation for this event, if there was an explanation for this heart attack and everything that followed. So the Rebbe told him to look someplace in Zohar. I've asked one of his children, he knows where the Zohar is. I haven't found anybody who knows where the Zohar is. And in the Zohar there's a story about a Tana who lived his life, and his time came to go away from the world. And he came to the Bezen Shamayla, he says he needs more time. Said there was a judgment, and they gave him more time. This is the story that the Rebbe referred to him in the Zohar. So all of a sudden, Rosh Chodesh Kislev becomes a story of enormous meaning, of unbelievable meaning. The Rebbe himself referred to this Zayat, indicating, in other words, that Pasha, the Rebbe was given more years to do the work that he needs to do. There's a letter, which I think last year I read with you, on Rosh Chodesh Kislev. It's a very, very beautiful, very personal, touching letter. It's dated, Erev Rosh Chodesh Cheshvan Tavshin Lamed Ches, a week after the Rebbe's event. The Rebbe wrote a letter to many people. It was called, what we call in our circles, a Michtav Klali Prati. It was a letter which the Rebbe wrote to many people. And the content of the letter is that the Rebbe says, you're inquiring about my health. So the Rebbe writes to them, I want you to know I'm feeling much better. And the Rebbe uses these words, in this chus of the tefillis of thousands, Tzvishin Klal Yisrael, in the merit of the prayers of thousands of Yidin, Tzvishin Klal Yisrael, the Eibush has given me a refuah, and it'll be a refuah shleim. The Rebbe himself refers to the fact that so many Yidin davened on his behalf. There was an unbelievable state of this at that time. But the Rebbe's gezon, Tzvishin Allah Kreisen. So I once heard from a mashpia of mine, insight. I'm going to share with you a thought that I heard once from a mashpia of mine in conjunction with this. The background of the following is what I told you so far. That the Rebbe indicated that the events of Rosh Chodesh Kislev were serious. The Rebbe wrote to somebody in an answer that the Eibishter Pasha gave him more years. So I once heard from a mashpia a commentary. He connected this story with a different story. Shmini Atzeres, the Rebbe came to Hakafis, as everybody knows. And we had Hakafis. In the middle of the fourth Hakafah, the Rebbe didn't feel well. In the middle of the fourth Hakafah, he turned to face the wall, and he turned to Rabbi Groner, and I heard that as soon as the Rebbe turned his head, the people saw his face, his whole face fell in. He was ashen. People saw the Rebbe really wasn't feeling well. And the Rebbe said to Rabbi Groner, it's not too difficult, please bring me my chair, I want to sit down. So Rabbi Groner, the chair was always there, the Rebbe never sat down in his chair. And he brought the Rebbe the chair. Now, if you remember Rebbe Groner, how he would put the chair behind the Rebbe, he wanted to put it very close to the Rebbe, but he didn't want to touch the Rebbe. So he was always juggling the chair. And I remember growing up, watching Rebbe Groner measure how close is too close and how far is too far when he put the chair behind the Rebbe. But on this occasion, he actually pushed the chair into the Rebbe's legs. So the Rebbe should know that the chair was there, the Rebbe sat down. The shul cleared out. The Rebbe finished Hakafas. He went to the seventh Hakafa. He was in the middle of a heart attack. And he went upstairs. The Rebbe went up to his room. As soon as the Rebbe went into his room, he collapsed on the shafas. The Rebbe was holding, he wanted nobody should see that he's physically compromised. The Rebbe never allowed himself to appear in public in a compromised condition. It was important to the Rebbe. The Rebbe went into his room, and after some details that are not important at the moment, the Rebbe went out, the Rebbe wouldn't eat, the Rebbe wouldn't drink. It's Shmirat Seres. He went to the sukkah, the Rebbe came in, they made him into the sukkah, he made Kiddush. They brought him grape juice. He says, this isn't wine, this is juice. So they brought him wine, they made Kiddush and wine. He drank a lot of citrus juice. The Rebbe knew a lot about heart attacks. This rumor is, now I don't know how much of this is true, that when the doctors examined the Rebbe, they said to the Rebbe, you once had a heart attack. The Rebbe said, yeah, I had a heart attack in 1964. So we're the medical records, but I took care of it myself. That's what the rumor is. I mean, it's the story, yeah? And the fact is that in Tavshin Chav Dalet, there was a period where the Rebbe reduced his work schedule. The Rebbe changed Yechidus from 3 times a week to 2 times a week. The Rebbe apparently had a heart trouble many years before, and he didn't want anyway. The Robinson didn't know about it, if such a thing is imaginable. In any case, but the doctor saw that Rebbe had had a prior heart attack. Rebbe went back into his room, and at first, there's a, you know, the details of the story are, at first he didn't let anybody in, and someone came, someone who had a special connection, knocked on the door, he called her, she called the Rebbe by his first name. The Rebbe opened the door for her, and she came in, and then that's how they got into the Rebbe. The bottom line is, the doctor tried to get the Rebbe to go to the hospital, the Rebbe refused. They got Rabbonim to paskin that the Rebbe is mechuyev to go to the hospital. So the Rebbe said to the Rabbonim, don't paskin, because I really don't want to go. They came into the Rebbe. Their job was, if they would paskin that the Rebbe has to go to the hospital, the Rebbe is Orthodox. He practices the same religion we practice. Or we should say, we should practice the same religion he practices. If the Rabbonim would say, Api Allah is mechuyev to go to the hospital, we'd go. He said to the Rabbonim, Ich will nicht gehen. I don't want to go. So they didn't paskin. The Rebbe stayed in his room. So what happened was, different things happened. People ran to the oil. They walked till Queens, which was quite a walk. And there was an unbelievable asedidus, and people were very lost and broken and upset. The Rebbe's almost immediate instructions were that Simchas Torah should continue. They should dance, they should celebrate, they should go to the shuls, they should be sameach other Jews, and so forth and so on. And one of the concerns was that the Rebbe should have peace and quiet. So they set up a wall of tables that cordoned off the whole front of 770. The whole back section of the shul, this whole area of the shul was blocked off. And they wanted quiet. And periodically, the doctors told the Rebbe that if there's too much noise, they can have the Hasidim toned down. Of course, I mean, if the noise is disturbing the Rebbe, they can make arrangements that it should be quiet. I mean, they could have locked 770 and sent people to other shuls. So the Rebbe said to one of the doctors, "The singing is music to my ears. Singing is music to my ears." And I believe the Rebbe said during the course of the night that the dancing and the chassidim, the singing of the chassidim, contributes to his refuah shleima. There was a Jew named Rabbi Kazanovsky. Rabbi Shlomo Aaron Kazanovsky was a very chassidish yid, and most importantly, he did a lot of the work for the Rebbe. He was an Askan Tzibur, he was a public servant, did a lot of good things. He davened with the Rebbe's minyan, I think Shmin Atzeres. There was a minyan outside the Rebbe's room. And the Rebbe was inside his room, and after davening, he went into the Rebbe to wish the Rebbe a good Yom Tov. And he was crying, and the Rebbe said, "Your tears don't contribute to my refuah. If you want me to be healthy, the technique to add to my refuah is that you should be besimcha tov levav." This is what the Rebbe wanted. So I heard once from one of my mashpim a very interesting insight, and I want to share it with you. The Rebbe said about the noise downstairs that it's music to his ears. There's an important point, a very, very important point. And the important point is that we've had recently in the Hayom Yom classes, which we learned by Hashgacha Pratis, the second hour, a series of classes on the concept of Hiskashiros. Hiskashiros means that there's a connection between Chassidim and a Rebbe. And there's a connection between a Rebbe and Chassidim. Again, I've shared this with you many, many times, that the Rabbi Isaac Homler, the Tabal Gezok, the Rabbi Isaac Homler was one of the Chassidim of the Alter Rebbe. The Rabbi Isaac Homler said once that he has a raya that Shlomo HaMelech was not a Chassid. What's his raya that Shlomo HaMelech was not a Chassid? Because Shlomo HaMelech uses a mushal, tries to explain the relationship between Yidden and Hashem, so he uses a mushal from a couple. From a couple. He says, had Shlomo HaMelech been a chassid, he would use the mushal of a chassid and a Rebbe. Because the connection between a chassid and a Rebbe is deeper than the connection between a husband and a wife. This is what Rabbi Isaac Homler said. It's a serious business. His kashas is a serious thing. The idea that there's a connection between a tzaddik, a neshama klolos, and an ordinary Jew is very deep and very special. What's important to understand is that it's symbiotic. It's a weird thing to say. Symbiotic means that it works both ways. Chassidim need a Rebbe, and a Rebbe needs Chassidim. It's a very interesting thing, and it's hard for us to understand, but it's true. According to Torah, when you learn in Chassidus, what Chassidus explains about the concept of a Reish B'nei Yisrael, a head of a generation, you discover that just as the body needs a head, the head needs a body. The Rebbe Marash said what usually we talk about this always on Hey Tavis, because this is the day for it. The Rebbe Marash once said to one of his chassidim in Yechidus, "As is da chassidim is da a Rebbe, ob chassidim was tuin, ob nicht Machaze dem Rebbe Ois Rebbe. The Rebbe Marash said once to one of his chassidim, to Rabbi Agamata Paltava, to the Paltava Rav, he said, if there's chassidim, there's a Rebbe. But chassidim will work. And if the chassidim don't work, they affect that the Rebbe should be the Rebbe. Which is, what does that mean? Bottom line is, there's a connection. So one of our mashpiyim explained that the Rebbe himself indicated that the events of Eshchedesh Kislev had to do with the possibility of an interruption. And that Min HaShemayim, they gave the Rebbe more years. So the Rebbe's commentary that the singing of the Hasidim is music to his ears, this mashpia interpreted very simple. The Rebbe needs to remain connected to the world. And the connection between the Rebbe and the world is the Hasidim. The connection between the Rebbe and his Gashmi, his Dikah life, is that Hasidim need him. The Chassidim are dependent upon him. And when Chassidim need the Rebbe, they enhance the Rebbe's presence in the world. Because a tzaddik, you know, I told you this many times, the Mittler Rebbe said in his Dveikus, hours before his Estalkus, the Mittler Rebbe went into Dveikus, and the Chassidim got very upset, and they started to scream, and they asked the Rebbe if the Rebbe heard what they were saying. So the Mittler Rebbe's response was, yes, I heard. What is such a lofty neshama doing in such a low world? Every Rebbe is a lofty neshama in a low world. The connection between the lofty neshama and the low world are the chassidim. And the Rebbe indicated that he needs the chassidim as much as the chassidim need him. And there are many indications to this effect. For example, Chanukah Tov Shalom Ches, there are several stories, and I might as well share the stories with you. One of the stories is that the Rebbe made a Fabrengen. This is also a story with Rabbi Hecht. Rabbi Yankiv Yudah Hecht, Olav HaShalom, Zechein HaLevracha. The Rebbe called in J.J. Hecht, as we called him, and he said to him, Irzucha Bal Meretz and Bal Sod, and he laughed. I'm looking for a Bal Meretz. Bal Meretz means a vigorous person who knows how to keep a secret. And he laughed. Because Rabbi Hecht was a Baal Meretz, but he was not a Baal Sod. His great strength was not keeping secrets. So I look at Baal Meretz, and the Rebbe said to him, I need you, because I cannot ask my secretaries because they won't listen to me. I cannot ask my doctors because they won't allow me. So you're on the outside of that inner circle. The Rebbe said, I want to make a Fabrengen, and I want to be mashlim, but I didn't do Simchas Teda. Simchas Teda, there was no fab. What happened was, Mata Simchas Teda, the Rebbe spoke from his room at 11:30 at night, a short sikha. The Rebbe sent down his wine from Havdalah for Kesha Bracha, but the Rebbe did not make a Fabrengen. So the Rebbe told Rabbi Hecht that he wants to make a Fabrengen, but he wants to surprise his secretaries. He wants that they should find out so late, they shouldn't be able to stop him. They shouldn't get the doctors involved and stop the effort. This is how the Rebbe was operating. So he said to Rabbi Hecht, I want you to prepare the challah and the mashke and the wine for Kesha Bracha, but don't tell anybody, because we're going to spring the trap at the last moment and it'll be too late and the Fabrengen is going to happen. So Rabbi Hecht says to the Rebbe, can I tell the Bacharim? I mean, that's Rabbi Hecht. So the Rebbe says, telling the Bacharim is like announcing it till Australia, the Rebbe tells him. He says, can I tell my brother? Bottom line is, by the time the Fabrengen started, the yeshiva's amount of time were here already. Nobody knows how they got here, but somehow the unconfirmed rumors were spread. He had a son in Marlstein at the time. However he worked it out, but he apparently didn't keep the secret. The only thing is the secretaries didn't know. Everybody else knew, but the Rebbe's secretaries and doctors didn't know. So it was a Fabreng. And by this Fabrengen, the Rebbe washed, and he had a Fabrengen, and he gave Keshel Bracha. And to the Rebbe, this was a continuation of Simchas Teda. It was a Hemshach of Simchas Teda. And they had told us then, I remember growing up, that you shouldn't go. Don't go to Kesha Bracha, don't take wine from the Rebbe, because you don't make the Rebbe stand, it's not good for his health, and so forth. A couple of days later, I believe, maybe it was a couple of days before, but whatever, during that same Chanukah, it had to be before, because this was Eis Chanukah, the Rebbe gave Chanukah gelt. The Rebbe gave Chanukah gelt. And he stood by the door, by the back door of 770, and he gave dollars. And the Rebbe didn't always give Chanukah gelt. The Rebbe did not always give Chanukah gelt. You know, in the early years, the Rebbe gave Chanukah gelt only to the Bacharim. The Rebbe used to give the children Chanukah gelt dimes by the rallies. But the Rebbe did not give Chanukah gelt. He was giving Chanukah gelt. And the people who were very concerned with the Rebbe's health were discouraging people from going. I heard Tzadik Shaker, David Raskin tells the story. He stood there pushing people away, saying, don't go, it's not fair to the Rebbe. So the Rebbe turns to him and looks at him and says to him, how do you know what's best for my health? Maybe for my health I must give these dollars. So that was the end of that. He got in line and got a doctor, not like everybody else. It doesn't mean you have to run every month to get dollars, but this is the point. The point is that the story of Reish Chodesh Kislev is a story about the Rebbe's recovery from a very, very severe illness. And by the Rebbe's own edus, it was a pnimizdika thing. It wasn't a physical ailment alone. There was a spiritual dimension to it. And the Eibishter Poshet gave the Rebbe more years. And many of Mashpia have explained that this has to do with the connection that exists between Chassidim and the Rebbe. In other words, when you have a Fabrenga and a Shchedesh Kislev, and you scratch your head and you say, so what does it mean? What does it mean? What am I supposed to do with this? First of all, obviously, what it means is very simple. You have to thank the Eibishter for the Rebbe. And the thank you that we owe the Eibishter for the Rebbe is beyond words. It's impossible to appreciate the unbelievable matana the Eibishter gave us in this Doir Yosem, in an orphan generation, after all the tzaras that Yidden have been through, the Eibishter gave us a Rebbe, and such a Rebbe. You know, the Rebbe Tzanchana used to say, the Rebbe's mother used to say, such a Rebbe there never was. I'm not saying it because he's my son, I'm saying it because it's the truth. The Rebbe Tzanchana used to say, there was a fellow named Radek, a man named Radek, who interviewed the Rebbe in the summer of 1950. And he met Rabbi Groner, Yitzchak Groner was a gezunt from Australia at a wedding. And he says, what this Rebbe is going to do for you, no Rebbe ever did. He met the Rebbe in the summer of 1950. The Rebbe was not yet officially Rebbe. He interviewed the Rebbe, and he heard, wie der Rebbe tracht, where his mind is, what his vision is, how far into the future he's looking. He says, what this Rebbe is going to do, no Rebbe ever did. And it's, I mean, there's so many dimensions to the Rebbe. There's so many dimensions to the Rebbe. It's so remarkable. You know, we're having this week in the Kinnas HaShluchim. Shlichus is one dimension of the Rebbe. I mean, I suppose you cannot say Shlichus is one dimension. Shlichus is the essence of the Rebbe, there's no doubt. But there's so many other things. Does anybody even begin to realize how much Torah we have from the Rebbe? Torah. In such diverse areas. The Rebbe has explored and opened up parts of Torah that have been mysterious for thousands of years. No one has learned them. No one has understood them. And no one has even attempted to. And that was put in for us on a platter. In Yom like Mashiach. We think Mashiach is a... In Lubavitch, Mashiach is a household word. I don't only mean the belief in Mashiach. I mean the study. Limud, understanding. Nevuah. Whoever talked about prophecy. The Rebbe has pushed it, edified, has enlightened this whole area of Torah in his Sichas and Marim, explained it in a way that you can actually begin to academically analyze these subjects. There are so many dimensions of the Rebbe. It's unreal. Meet 10 Lubavitcher Chassidim. Okay? One is a Rav, and one is a Mashpia, and one is involved in Tzedaka, and one is a Shliach, and one is whatever it is, one is a businessman, and ask them who the Rebbe is. You get 10 different human beings. 10 people, the way each one perceives the Rebbe. You speak to one person, what's the Rebbe? He has categorized halacha minik. He's told us all the Lubavitcher customs. It means a klinikait. You have no idea. There are so many dimensions of the Rebbe. The Rebbe had one limitation. The Rebbe had one limitation. Kelim. Chassidim. Makablim. If you put your hand out, you put something in. And everybody got what they wanted. But if nobody put their hand out and wanted a particular goodie, it wasn't going to waste it. I mean, this is mamish true. If you look at the Rebbe's nesiyas, and you look at the generosity of the Rebbe, the fabringis, my modem, yechidis. Does anybody, I mean, I'm too young. But we understand what Yechidus was. Yechidus. It didn't happen in previous generations like this. The Rebbe sat and talked to people. He was people's therapist. B'pash t'sachei p'shuta. And he taught people about Yiddishkeit and about the Eibishter. Religion and science. Just to give you a silly example. How many hours did the Rebbe waste, if you could use that word, discussing religion and science, with scientists and with shluchim, with people, just giving and giving. As long as there was somebody there who could take it, he was giving. In every area of life, the amazing thing about the Rebbe was, it was all wrapped so tight. It was so carefully packaged that on the outside you saw nothing. The point that I'm trying to communicate, so to speak, is we have to thank the Eibishter for the Rebbe, obviously the first point, and we don't have adequate language which to thank the Rebbe. The second point is to appreciate. Again, this is what I heard from one of my mashpiyim, and I'm sharing it this year with you, because we have a Shchedesh Kislev every year. You have to say something a little different. that from the Rebbe's behavior surrounding the event of Eshchedesh Kislev, it becomes apparent that the Rebbe needs Chassidim for his Gesund. And the Gesund of the Chassidim, Begashmis of Aruchnis, affects the Gesund of the Rebbe. I'll say one thought, and I'll have to take a break. Okay, we're going to breathe, and then we're going to continue. Okay, that's how we're going to do this. We're going to stop and breathe, and we'll continue. Why? There's mystical reasons for every breath. On the day of Shmini Atzeres, one of the doctors got permission from the Rebbe to give him some kind of an injection, a medication with a needle. And the Rebbe sat and watched how he filled the syringe from the vial. You know, those little glass bottles with the rubber tops that they poke needles in and you wonder why it doesn't leak out. One of the miracles of nature. And he puts the needle into this little vial and he's pulling back. And the fluid miraculously goes up from the vial into the syringe. The simple reason is that vial has no air. And the syringe has no air. And when you create a vacuum, it creates a suction. In other words, for something to move from one space into another, it doesn't necessarily mean that it has to go down, like we always perceive gravity. It has to go from a full place into an empty place. It's a physical law. If you have one place that's full, and one place that's empty, yeah, you have two glass bottles, and one has water in it, and the other is empty, and you put the two bottles together, the water is going to go from one to the next until it's even. If you have one bottle that has air in it, oxygen, H2O, and the other one is empty, it's a vacuum, you put next to one another, the air is going to move from one to the next. And the same is true of fluids. If you have an empty space, the fluid is going to fill that empty space. So he's pulling back on the syringe, and the fluid is going from the bottle into the syringe. So the Rebbe says to him, as if the Rebbe didn't know, what is the reason that the fluid goes from the bottle into the syringe? It's going up. It's not going down, it's going up. Is it because there's a force called a suction? Or is it simply because there's a vacuum, an empty space? Does it have to be a negative force that pulls it in? Or is it simply because when you have an empty space, the nature of an empty space that it needs to be filled? This is the philosophical proposal the Rebbe offered him. So he tells the Rebbe it's not the suction, it's the vacuum. It's not because there's a negative pull, but because when you have empty space, space does not allow itself to be empty. If you have an empty space and something becomes available, it would fill it. So the Rebbe said this is an unbelievable lesson. That the fact that the Rebbe is physically not present with the Chassidim and Shul adds to the connection between the Rebbe and the Chassidim. Because they don't need to have a draw. You just need to have a heder, a rekus. And the Rebbe said to go downstairs in the middle of the office. And I remember them stopping in the middle of the night, Simchas Torah by the office, and I don't know who it was, got up and repeated this idea that the Rebbe had said, that the fact that the Rebbe is not present adds to the connection to the Chassidim and the Rebbe. And much of the Yom Tif, the Rebbe himself repeated this point. Okay, we'll take a break and we'll continue.